Welcome to Fire is Orange, a short story compilation by number one New York Times bestselling author, Scott Segler!
Ten titillating tales to tantalize your thoughts.
Hello, junkies. We have a great one for you today. This is part one of a five-part audio novella. This story is from Jonathan Mayberry's V-Wars universe. But it's mine! I wrote it! Not him. I wrote it. From V-Wars, which is a brand new show on Netflix. It just launched. You can watch the whole first season right now. It is a crazy, wild vampire story. We'll get into it a little bit in the author's notes. I explain it more. This story, all five parts, are read by none other than Ray Porter, one of our favorite narrators of the Siglerverse. He really brings the story to life. He is so good at what he does. We just love him. After the episode, though, I will tell you about some big news. And if you're a fan of mine, or a devotee of Siglerism, or both, a Venn diagram, that is two overlapping circles, this might be possibly bad news for you. But first, story time. We have a little author's note for you for V-Wars, and then we'll just roll in to the story. I hope you dig it. Here we go with The Hippo. Author's notes for The Hippo. V-Wars is the fictional world of my friend, author Jonathan Mayberry. Comics and short story anthologies of V-Wars are available from IDW Publishing. Netflix made the TV show of the same name. Before there was a TV show, Jonathan asked his writer pals to come play in this dark world he'd created, a world where vampires are real. So what makes Mayberry's vampire world different from all the rest? Well, before becoming a novelist and comic book writer, Mayberry wrote nonfiction books about vampire legends across the globe. In books such as Vampire Universe, he drilled down to how vampire legends are different from ancient culture to ancient culture. He brought that experience into V-Wars. The vampires there reflect the depth and breadth of many vampire types from many varied cultures. In short, V-Wars is super cool, and there are a whole bunch of different kinds of vamps. So when he asked me to write in his V-Wars universe, what kind of vamp did I pick? None of the above. I wrote about a vampire hunter. A rather disturbed vampire hunter from Oakland. I thought to myself, self, vampires are messed up, murderous creatures. So just how twisted would someone have to be for a vampire to call him a sick fuck? The answer? Pretty twisted. Enjoy The Hippo.
The Hippo by Scott Sigler. Cry and cry again. The little girl cried. She cried loud. She cried non-stop. The sound of it echoed through the night, bounced off the walls of abandoned buildings, burnt-out cars, reached up to the star-blocking clouds. Harry sat very still. He watched, from a distance, of course. He couldn't make his move too quickly just because that girl made enough noise to wake the dead. Bloods were fast. Bloods were strong. And lately, the Bloods were organized. Those cries would draw them in, Harry knew. And if he and Rebecca didn't mind their P's and Q's, the monsters might catch him off guard. The girl was still alive, obviously, too stupid to stay quiet, too weak to know her mewling put her at risk. She probably always got a trophy in kids' soccer, even though she didn't do shit to help the team win, and hell, these days it didn't matter if the team won at all. Coddled parents didn't even bother to keep score for their second-generation coddled children. Fucking kids these days. No grit in them at all. Harry wished he could find the child psychologists responsible for that horse shit and kick them dead square in the nuts. And or vajayjay. Harry wasn't sexist, mind you. Why would he do that? Because coddled kids weren't tough. They didn't know what it meant to get the shit knocked out of them, didn't know what it meant to lose. Losing teaches awareness. In a game of soccer, awareness matters a lot. In life, especially in Oakland, awareness keeps you alive. Out there, the little girl was crying her damn fool head off instead of staying quiet and finding a good place to hide. She wanted someone to come and get her instead of realizing she was on her own.
"We're all on our own, sweetie," Harry whispered. "Ain't that right, Rebecca?"
Rebecca didn't answer. She rarely did. The crying girl didn't understand what she was really doing. She wasn't calling for help. She was calling for her own death. Harry would save the girl if he could. She'd been going on like that for maybe 10 minutes, long enough for him to know that if there were any Bloods in the area, they were already on the way. So he and Rebecca would wait. And while waiting, why not have a bit of a snack? Harry rolled a little to his right side so he could reach inside his long coat. Slowly, silently, he pulled out a small, square Tupperware container. The container wasn't that deep, just large enough for 4 mini cupcakes pressed in so tight they were almost square instead of round. Red velvet, cream cheese frosting. Harry made them himself, using his father's recipe. A wonderful way to pass the time between outings. Slowly, silently, he took one out, set it on the ground in front of him. Slowly, silently, he sealed the container and slid it back inside the inner coat pocket. Slowly, silently, he peeled the paper from the cupcake. Tavina couldn't see the girl, but she heard her. Tavina could almost taste those cries. Cries of fear, cries of pain.
"Gotta be wounded," Peter said. "Easy pickings."
His words sounded wet. Was he drooling? Tavina would have yelled at him, but she was damn near drooling herself. A wounded little girl didn't get any better than that. Peter reached inside his dark blue denim coat and drew his sidearm. He flipped off the safety. 2 weeks ago, Tavina would have called that a gun, or maybe a piece, back when she still called magazines clips. But now she knew better. She looked at his weapon.
"You think the person making that noise is going to hurt us? You scared, Pete?" "Hell, maybe you should be. She sounds at least 7.
Peter started to shake his head in annoyance, then stopped. His eyes squinted shut. He pinched the bridge of his nose with his free hand.
"Pete, you all right?"
He nodded lightly.
"Yeah. Headache is still a bitch."
"You want a Tylenol?"
"Does Tylenol even work on us anymore?"
Tavina shrugged.
"I don't know. I haven't had a headache since I changed. And when I said you want a Tylenol, I meant stop being a fucking pussy already."
Peter opened his eyes, blinked rapidly.
"Oh, sorry. I didn't understand you at first. I only speak bossy-ass bitch as a second language. I'm rusty."
Tavina sighed. She didn't like Peter. No one did, really. No one except Charlemagne, apparently.
And if Charlie liked him, did the opinion of anyone else really matter?
Nope, not one bit. Peter fucked up left and right, yet he got private meetings with Charlie. Hell, he'd been in her truck for 2 hours before this very mission. Maybe Charlie saw something in Peter that no one else did. Maybe they were screwing each other silly. Tavina didn't know. Whatever their relationship, Charlie had finally sent Peter out on this mission, making him do some actual work for a change. Unfortunately, she'd assigned him to Tavina. Peter stopped blinking, made an obvious effort to control his pain.
"I'm fine," he said. "I'm okay.
Didn't ask if you were. Thanks for caring. You and Charlie do tequila shots in her truck or something? Maybe you're hungover."
"No shots,"
he said. He thought for a second, then shrugged.
"Maybe hungover, though, or something like that."
"Which happens without booze, how?"
guess, Peter said. She had this doc there, asked me to be a guinea pig, see if gas would work on us.
Well, at least they weren't screwing, not unless Charlie liked her men unconscious.
What kind of gas?
He shrugged.
How would I know? The kind that works on us, that's what kind. I was out the whole time.
Well, that was just great. Tavina wasn't just saddled with the group fuck-up, she was saddled with a stoned version of the group fuck-up.
You sure you're good for this, Pete? Oakland is no place to screw around. And there's a psycho killer somewhere out here, in case you forgot.
I haven't forgot anything,
he snapped.
I'm just hungry is all. I know how dangerous it is out here. I got shot just last week. Twice. Doesn't feel that good, you know?
Tavina did know. 10 days ago, she'd taken a round in the leg. She got the guy who pulled the trigger, of course. She'd taken her time with him. He'd been a big one, maybe 6'3 and at least 230. Before her change, a guy like that would have fucked her up, then probably gone ahead and actually fucked her. That's what big guys did to women. But after the change, he'd begged her to stop. Paybacks are a bitch.
I'm hungry, Pete said.
So I've heard.
Let's get the girl.
And there it was. One of the many reasons no one liked Pete.
We're supposed to be looking for a killer,
Tavina said.
It's not snack time.
Napoleon said an army marches on its stomach.
Fucker was always quoting shit. He thought it made him smart. Well, he was smart. For sure, smarter than she was, and she knew it. But Peter was also a coward. Even with the strength and speed that came with his change, he was always so cautious, so careful. Every time the guns came out, he angled to be the last one into the fight, if not just stay behind altogether and protect the rear, as he liked to call it. That was why Charlie had put Tavina in charge. Peter hated both A, blacks, and B, women, which made serving under Tavina a real pain in his lily-white ass. Still, the boy had a way with words. He could almost always talk people into getting what he wanted.
Come on, Tavina, he said, his voice smooth and sweet. We'll just take a look. We're still following orders. We're supposed to look around, right? We'll just look where that girl happens to be.
Tavina's stomach rumbled. She wondered if he heard it. The smile on his face told her that he had.
You know what, Peter?
What?
One of these times that clever-ass mouth of yours is going to get you into trouble.
His smile faded.
Is this one of those times?
Tavina unslung her shotgun. Her eyesight had improved with the change, but hadn't helped the fact that she still couldn't shoot for shit. With the Remington 870, however, she didn't have to hit something dead on, just aim in the general direction and let the spray do the rest.
Nope, she said. This isn't one of those times. I'm hungry, too. You go first.
Peter looked at her weapon, a thoughtful frown on his face.
You know, with that shotgun and your foot speed, maybe it makes more...
She lowered the barrel until it pointed at the man. He stopped talking.
Keep trying to put thoughts in my head, Pete. And one of those times is going to come a whole lot faster than you'd like.
He glanced down at the black shotgun's barrel, which was aimed right at his nuts, then back to Tavina. He smiled.
How about I go first?
Good idea,
Tavina said.
You're always so full of good ideas.
Harry ate a second cupcake.
Delicious.
The frosting was what set off a proper red velvet, and his frosting was the bomb. He put the wrapper in an outside pocket where it joined the first. You couldn't leave anything behind, not even a scrap of paper from a delicious mini cupcake. Back in his cop days, scouring the scene around a murder always meant looking for not only shell casings and footprints, but also food wrappers and even crumbs. Any detritus that could tell you this is where the perp was. So, no paper left behind. And no crumbs either, but that wasn't a problem because Harry made some seriously fucking moist cupcakes. Crumbs were the mark of either an amateur or one of those vegan motherfuckers and their gluten-free bullshit sawdust recipes. Seriously, if you want to live like a herd animal, then stop cooking and just go eat some grass. Movement. It was dark, but Harry's eyes were well adjusted to what little light there was. The man was 50 meters out, sidearm in his right hand. Thick coat, black, or maybe dark blue. Harry watched him cut across the lawn of a small ranch house, move onto the sidewalk outside the next house in line, then hunker down by the back bumper of a Toyota with no tires. The guy didn't look like much. A twitchy type. Seemed to be moving cautiously, though, and that was other movement. Smaller person, a woman probably carrying a shotgun. Harry couldn't make out the model. She passed wide of the Toyota, kept going, then came to a stop 15 meters further down the street, 15 meters closer to the crying girl. The woman raised the shotgun to her shoulder and swept the area in front of her. After about 10 seconds, the man stood and advanced past her. Motherfucker, they were leapfrogging. Someone was training them. Not a good sign. Harry licked his fingers. He wiped them dry against his coat and then settled down to wait. Kids these days. Tavina slid to a stop by a burned-out Ford F-150. Recently burned, judging by the greasy, melted plastic smell oozing out of the charred interior. A block ahead, the girl was just sitting there, her butt on the pavement, back leaned against the front right wheel of a boxy, graffiti-covered truck. The truck's sides had panels halfway up, the kind that were hinged at the top. How ideal. The girl was resting against a food truck. She was still crying, the face-wrinkling kind of cry that shut her eyes tight, left her mouth open, a string of dangling drool caught light from the street lamp above. The girl was directly under that street lamp, the only light still working on the street, the only illumination at all, really, as the people left in Oakland knew well enough to shut their rundown houses up tight and keep everything dark. House lights at night were the equivalent of neon signs saying, "Come kill us." Just the one light. And the girl right under it. And then Tavina smelled blood. The girl was wounded. Tavina's hunger spiraled up, almost made her leave her position and just rush forward, but she stayed put. Charlie had taught her better. Discipline. Charlie said self-control turned brawlers into soldiers and soldiers into armies. Charlie said it took an army to win a war. Think, Tavina, think. Ignore the hunger and the smells and the sounds. Something isn't right. A gleam of metal on the ground by the girl's butt. A weapon? No, not a weapon. The girl's hands were behind her back. The gleam was... Peter shot by, all speed and intensity. He wasn't moving to the next logical leapfrog position. He was moving as fast as he could, going straight for the girl. The coward, attacking the weak, attacking the girl who was chained to the truck. Tavina started to shout out a warning, but stopped. If there were beats around, she couldn't reveal her position, but she had to warn Peter, order him back. Indecision froze her for a few seconds, which was all the time Peter needed to close in. The girl saw Peter coming. Her screams rose higher and louder and faster. The sound of snapping metal rang through the night. Peter's feet stopped cold while momentum threw his body down in a violent arc that slammed his face against the pavement. Something on Peter's feet, glinting under the street lamp. A trap? Someone used a little girl as bait? No, not someone. Tavina had to let Charlie know, but she had to help Peter. Couldn't leave one of her own behind. She sprinted around the F-150, her beyond powerful legs closing the distance to Peter in seconds. The girl still screaming, still bleeding, her face a wet red mask of terror hiding behind a sheet of thin blonde hair. Peter, his left leg pinned between two half circles of blackened metal, triangular trap teeth buried in blood-soaked denim, Peter's leg flopping sickly below the half-circles. He screamed, too, a whiny bellow that would have sounded more at home coming from the little girl's throat. Tavina stopped, her hands flexing on the shotgun. The smell of the girl's blood had short-circuited her brain. She was in the open, under a streetlight, lit up like a solo dancer at center stage. Lit up like a target. In that moment, Tavina knew she had blown it, knew that Charlie would be so disappointed. Then a crack echoed off the mostly abandoned houses as something slammed into her left hip. Heightened senses let her hear the bone cracking, splintering, let her feel shrapnel shards of the same exploding and driving through flesh from the inside out. Let her sense the bullet tumbling, gouging its way through muscle and vein until it exploded from her inner left thigh in a meat pie spray. The street lamp spun above her. Tavina found herself on the ground.
"You've been shot? Put pressure on it?"
She was changed. She could heal so fast. Could she die? Stupid question. Of course she could die. Plenty of her kind had fallen to the San Francisco mercs and to the psycho. The pain pummeled her all at once, a steamroller of agony that squashed the air from her lungs. Tavina rolled to her back. Her right leg worked, so did her arms, but the left leg just screamed and held her in place like an anchor wedged deep in ocean floor rock.
"Tavina, get up, you dumb bitch!"
Peter shouting at her.
"You stupid whore! Get up! Help me! I've almost got it! Just get up and help get this fucking thing off of me!"
She lifted her head, looked down the length of her body. Peter had jammed his fingers between the trap's triangular teeth. He was pulling them apart, slowly, arms trembling with the effort. An impossible task for a normal man, and just the tiniest bit beyond his enhanced strength. If she could move to him, help him, the ruined leg would slide free. The goddamn girl kept screaming. Why did she have to smell so good? Boot heels on the pavement, coming quickly but not running. Tavina turned to her right, to the source of the sound. A fat man. Beyond fat, obese, but moving with purpose, stepped into the street lamp's outermost illumination. Black trench coat hanging heavy, flat black material making him more a blob of shadow than a man. He carried a rifle, also black, like an M16 but stretched out with an oversized mag and some kind of rectangular thing on the end of the barrel. Black boots, black pants, black skin, not a shiny spot on him save for two eyes set deep back below fat black cheeks and heavy eyebrows. Tavina blinked, tried to process what was happening, but could only think one clear thought. That fat man was handsome.
"Tavina, help me! God damn it, get the fuck up!"
Peter pulling hard against the trap's jagged-toothed half-circles, his arms trembling, needing just a little more space to free his ruined leg. But that was silly because he wouldn't be able to run, and where would he go? And it was really kind of too bad that he couldn't actually turn into a bat and fly away like the old legends said. The fat man stopped 5 feet from Peter.
"Oh, don't get up on my account," the fat man said, then put the rifle stock to his shoulder, aimed, and fired.
Peter's left hand popped in a cloud of blood and bone that caught the street lamp's gleam, a red and white firework mist that sparkled in the air before drifting away. The trap snapped back together again, triangular teeth punching in even farther than before. Tavina wondered if Peter's soaked jeans were the only thing that kept his shin and foot from falling free. At least Peter stopped screaming. That was something, wasn't it? Peter lifted what was left of his hand, held it in front of his shocked face, a ground-up mess of red, raw hamburger on a stick. The pinky was still there, and most of the thumb, but the rest of his fingers were nowhere to be seen. He could heal, yeah, but not regenerate. Peter was fucked. So was Tavina. She knew it. Her body started to shiver. So cold, all of a sudden, as if the temperature had just plummeted 50 degrees. The man took another step toward Peter. The little girl screamed even louder. Peter looked up at the shambling mound of black-clad black man.
"I'll kill you,"
Peter said, trying to sound fierce but not getting anywhere near it. The man let out a lip-flapping huff of air, like he was casually impersonating a horse.
"Probably not," he said.
He raised the long rifle and fired again. Peter's upper body spun away and down. He lay on his side, much of his right shoulder just gone, blood pouring from the wound to slicken the shreds of his blue coat. The fat man turned to the little girl.
"You should shut up now," he said. "Unless, of course, you want to do this again tomorrow night?"
The crying instantly ceased. The girl's lips quivered and her whole body trembled as if the cries inside of her were fighting hard to swell her up and rip out. She was more afraid of the fat man than anything else in the world. The fat man turned to Tavina, swinging the strange weapon as he did until she was looking straight down the wide barrel.
"Evening," he said. "Believe it or not, you can heal from that wound. If you be good and stay still, you get to live. At least, a little while longer anyway, and can any of us really ask for more?"
Tavina stared at him, so cold. Pain crashed through her, consumed her.
"I asked you a question," the man said. "Will you be good?"
Something inside of her wanted to say, "Yes, Daddy, I'll be good." Something bottled up from way back when, something that she'd thought had evaporated forever after her change, but it was still in there, just waiting for this monster to chip it out of her soul. She nodded.
"Good,"
the fat man said. He slung the rifle. He reached into his long, flat black coat and pulled out a keychain. He knelt next to the girl, his wide body blocking any view of her. A rattle, then the man stood, folded a pair of handcuffs, and made them vanish inside his coat. The little blonde girl stared up at him. Tavina had killed a dozen men, a half dozen women, even two children. All of them had looked at her with utter terror in their last moments, but all of those expressions combined couldn't match the girl's horrified stare. The man jerked a thumb at the spray-painted truck.
"If I was you, I'd get into the back and come with me. First aid kit is in there, and your cut isn't that bad. I'll call Academy and tell them to come get you. Maybe they'll take you in as a refugee. You're young enough. They might not have the heart to leave you on this side of the bridge. If you don't want to come with me, I doubt you'll make it through the night."
Tavina couldn't keep her head up. She let it slowly fall back to the pavement, then heard the pitter-patter of little feet sprinting away. The fat man was right. The girl wouldn't make it. The smell of her blood would bring out the loners and the strays. By sunrise, she'd be dead, if she was lucky, and didn't wind up with the kind that liked to keep prey alive as long as possible so the meat stayed fresh. The little footsteps faded away.
"Kids," the man said. "Am I right?"
Tavina didn't answer him. Peter moaned softly.
"Help me."
The fat man laughed.
"Ain't that a hoot? I bet you've heard people say that a bunch. And you know who helped them? No one. Your time's up, asshole."
Tavina lifted her head again, saw the man reach into his coat, and wondered just how many pockets were inside of it. A coat so big it could be a tent. The fat man pulled out something short and stubby, something that fit perfectly in his large fist. The street lamp's light glinted off something circular attached to the end of it. The man pressed a button. The circle spun with a soft whirring noise.
A saw. A bone saw.
The fat man put his knee against Peter's neck, leaned all his weight against it, pinning Peter's head to the pavement. The saw descended, brought forth a new kind of high-pitched scream. Peter's good leg kicked, but not for long.
That was part one of The Hippo. In the next episode, we get to meet Hippo's Pops. It's a family affair in Oakland. Now, before the episode, I told you we were looking at some potentially bad news. Well, things have finally come to a head as far as the number of projects that we have taken on, the amount of time we're putting in, and frankly, things have gotten overwhelmingly busy. We are falling behind in various parts of the business, and the whole business world is changing on us with the boom in ebooks and, the boom in audiobooks. Ebooks are still out there. We are doing all of our own work and not putting anything out with a big publisher, with the exception of the Aliens Phalanx novel that's out February. And frankly, we're falling behind in a few areas. Now, our primary purpose here at Empty Set is to put out books for sale to make money, to have a business that puts food on the table and a roof over our heads. I love putting this podcast out for you guys. We've done it for a very long time. We put out all these stories. But at our core, we are a business. We are in the business of business, so to speak. Things are going fine in the business department. I don't want everybody to worry like, oh no, Empty Set's running out of money. No, it's nothing like that. It's more that we just have so many projects right now that we are working really insane hours, A Real Girl and I both. Frankly, we basically work all the time, unless we are traveling, which we are not doing much of, and we have completely cut back on cons for next year. We're trying to carve out more time for writing and finishing projects and the marketing of our books. So we will not even be on the road for most of the cons where people regularly see us. We've already addressed it from that perspective. In a nutshell, here's an analogy. We due to all the work we have going on and stuff in our personal lives, we've canceled Christmas. We're having a Christmas party, and we had to look at it and be like, we just don't have time to do this. So I am Scrooge. I canceled Christmas. It's the way it goes. The reason we're telling you this is because there's so many projects we have promised for a long time, and we want to get out. We desperately want to get to the crypt before something happens in Hollywood. Something is going to happen in Hollywood in the next few years. When that something happens, all of our time will be gone. When we're doing the show, that's all we will be doing. So that means we are considering two big things. Number one, making Siglerfest 2K20 our final Siglerfest. That will be our 10th annual, and it might be just the right time to go out on a high note. That event chews up an enormous amount of our time. It's not just the 3 days of the event. It's not just the 3 days we spend setting up for the event, the day we spend tearing down for the event, all the travel, all the packing. It's an enormous amount of time, mostly on A Real Girl's shoulders. And that's all time that when she's doing that, she's not focusing on our publishing, our marketing, our distribution, all the various things that go into being a publisher. So the other part that we are considering is that when Fire is Orange is done at the end of The Hippo, 4 weeks from now, we have no stories left to podcast. For the first time in our history as a podcast, we ain't got nothing left. We're not keen on the idea of repodcasting something we podcast before just to keep the podcast going. Because even doing that requires time for us to prep the episodes, to record the episodes, to post them, to do the album art, to do all the things that chew up 5, 6, 7 hours a week. And when you look at that over the course of a year, that's a lot of writing time. That's a lot of business time. So for the first time since 2005, come January 2020, the podcast might not have regular Sunday content. That doesn't mean it would be going away forever. That means next time we have something to podcast, we'll fire up the podcast feed again. You just might not get us every week, and that incredible track record may finally be coming to an end. Now, I know we're going to get well-wishing emails saying, hey, why don't you just write a story, an hour of story a week, and podcast that? There's so much more to it than just the writing. Writing, editing, recording, editing, album art, putting the post up, all the things that I've told you about before. So if we can't do it right We're just not going to do it. Again, we haven't figured this all out yet. Right now, to give you an example of what my workload is, I'm doing page galleys for Aliens, Aliens Phalanx novel. I am 75% of the way through the final draft for Mount Fitzroy, 50% of the final draft of the way through the final draft of GFL Book 6, which is Fitzroy's a 240,000-word book. It's huge. GFL 6 is going to be about the same size. Also huge. We're also in the final draft for The Killer, a GFL novella. And there's more that we can't talk about yet. All of these things are going on, and it's just a freaking madhouse. To be perfectly honest with you, I may have to finally admit that after 782 years of life as the walking cadaver on this earth, or on life, however you prefer it, I'm kind of killing myself with all this work. We've been trying to, A and I have been trying to have more of a work-life balance, but frankly, it doesn't work out all that well because all we do is work. So we have to clear out these big deadlines I talked to you about if we're going to get to the crypt and get that done right. Not just do it, but get it done right. If we don't get these things done, we're at the risk of not delivering on the stories that we have promised. So we're heavily focused on finishing up the GFL correctly. Don't forget, we still have Book 7 and Book 8 to go on top of The Killer and GFL Book 6. And we don't want to not deliver on these. I mean, look how long it's taken me to get GFL Book 6 out. It's taken a gosh darn long time. And we want to get all of these products finished for you so you can enjoy the story. You guys have already spent so much time with us. We want to make sure we finish correctly. Tell the story correctly. We don't want to go out like Game of Thrones. We don't want to go out like Lost. For the big series that I do, we want them to be done absolutely correctly so that you guys can see all of the forethought that went into these entire series. We're not just going to end it and have somebody walk off a cliff and go, "Hey, we planned that all along. We sure did." No, we've got the end planned. Getting to that end is going to take an enormous, enormous amount of work to get it all done, tie all the threads, done correctly. I'm just rambling right now. So that's just to give you a shot across the bow, a heads up. We will keep you informed about the status of both the podcast and future Sigler Fest. And that's it for now. So stay tuned to this very podcast, y'all, if you want to hear more. That's it for this week. We will be back next week with the Hippo Part 2, where we meet Hippo's pops. And until then, we will talk to you all real soon. You have been listening to Fire is Orange, a short story compilation by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. Narrated by Scott Sigler, Ray Porter, and A. Kovacs. Produced by A. Kovacs. Engineered by Steve Rickyberg. Copyright 2019, Empty Set Entertainment. All rights reserved. For more information about the author, visit scottsigler.com. Theme music by the band Amps and Volts.